This show furnished by Dr. Gregory A. Smith.
Cutting through the massive disinformation and propaganda to give you the truth about medical and political controversies, this is Truth, Medicine, and Politics with the executive producer of the award-winning film, American Addict, Dr. Gregory A. Smith. To get on air live with your questions or comments, call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222. Or 800-ABC-KABC. And now, Dr. Gregory A. Smith.
And it is Saturday night, so that means that I am back. And as usual, we are going to discuss tonight something that is so very important, but is just ignored, not covered by the mainstream media, but it's something that you really need to know about. And that's what's going on with the Native Americans in this country. And before I bring on my guests, I just want to set this up a little bit. People know certain things about Native Americans. I think there's a lot of stereotypes, things like there's a lot of alcoholism, Native American reservations, there's poverty, this type of thing. But there's a lot of political aspects to this that really mean something to all of us. You don't have to be Native American to have this affect you. And my guest is going to talk about that tonight, what the Obama administration is doing with the Native Americans. So what I'm really talking about is the Obama administration has a federal American Indian policy, and these policies that are enacted with these reservations and the tribal governments actually affect pretty much everyone here in the United States. My only real experience with Native American issues is really from what I the few things that I've read, and also by a nurse that has worked with me for many years, named Ruby Seawalker, and she's the best nurse I've ever worked with, actually. And if you have seen the film American Addict 2, which I might as well plug that came out in July, it's on Amazon and iTunes and everywhere. She's in that movie taking care of the patient, Mike, that appears in that movie. And so that's really my own experience. So there's a lot of stereotypes and misinformation. And basically, we've all been subjected to that. And how do we get our information? We get our information from the media. And it's what they tell us, but probably more importantly, what they don't tell us about what's going on in the reservation and the political aspects. It's really, really shocking and important. My guest tonight is Elaine Willman. She is Cherokee. She's an author. She's a speaker. She's an activist. And she just wrote an article about 7 or 8 days ago that appeared in the New American. And I just want to read you a little excerpt. The title of the article was titled Warpath: Obama's Indian Policy Threatens All Americans, Both Tribal and Non-Tribal Citizens. And there's a quote that I'm going to read to you. It says that flying completely under the radar of the vast majority of Americans, federal Indian policies of the Obama administration are subverting our constitutional order and successfully transferring vast landholdings and natural resources to corrupt, federally controlled tribal governments. This is already not sounding good. So without further time wasted here, let me bring on Elaine. Elaine, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Smith. And I first want to thank you very much for inviting me on your show. And I'll give a little background to the listeners as to who I am and where I'm coming from. But I also want to thank you for inviting your guest last week, David Icke, on the show. I listened to the show last week, and he was so remarkable in explaining in very simple terms an enormously complex issue of this global governization and the hidden hand and the analogy that he used with the spider and the web. And my topic tonight is on federal Indian policy, and it has become part of that web. And so my topic tonight is what I call a best-kept secret, but it ties very much in with everything David Icke was speaking of last week. So I truly appreciate being here. You mentioned that I am Cherokee. My mother and grandmother were enrolled I believe my ancestors, my Cherokees, came from the Georgia area on the East Coast and did the Trail of Tears into Oklahoma. That's where all of my family's from. But I am not an enrolled tribal member. I am enrollable, but I'm not enrolled. And my husband is Shoshone from the Idaho and Wyoming area. He is a direct descendant of Sacagawea's adopted son, Basil. On her return trip with Lewis and Clark, she learned her sister died, and Sacagawea adopted a little four-year-old boy who is my husband's great-great-grandfather. So both of us have a childhood affection and appreciation and respect for our own ancestry, and I want your listeners to know that I am not speaking about culture. What I'm just talking about tonight in the way of federal Indian policy are government decisions that are affecting a wonderful culture. And I speak for tribal members who are unable to speak for themselves. Most of the tribal governments do not recognize the United States Constitution. Enrolled tribal members do not have civil rights or the Bill of Rights within their government. And they face very serious consequences if they disagree with their leaders. I mean, very serious, which I might have time to go into later.
Elaine, can you define, what do you mean by enrolled tribal member? What do you mean by that?
Enrolled. We have 324 million Americans. And of that figure, 2 million, according to the Census Bureau, identify themselves as Native Americans. A little over 1 million of those that identify as Native Americans are enrolled. They belong to a tribal government. They are enrolled members. They have a dual citizenship. They're all full American citizens off their reservation, but they are citizens of a separate, quasi-dependent, sovereign tribal government. So they have a dual citizenship, and under their tribal government, they do not have the civil rights and the Bill of Rights and the things that all of us Americans have. And they live very much communally. Most of the tribal lands that are under the governance of the tribe are not only, you know, there's very little, there are very few tribal members on Indian reservations that own their own land. I will also say that out of those 2 million that mark their census as Native Americans, about 4 out of 5 has moved off of the reservation. So we're talking about a very small number, but it's a suffering number of American Indians that are enrolled tribal members of 567 tribal governments. And when you consider we have 50 states and we have 567 growing tribal governments within these states, it's quite a secret. And the problem is that many of these reservations are located in, the Midwest and the West, and our American folks are public in the urban areas, much like me. When I lived in Southern California, I had no clue about federal Indian policy, or just none. And I had that Dancing with Wolves perception that somewhere out there were these Indian reservations where the sort of sitting like a little island, and it's only teepees and no roads, and we have that Dancing with Wolves perception of an Indian reservation, and Indian reservations are nothing like that, with the possible exception of the Navajo. So what I'd kind of like to do this evening, if it's okay with you, Dr. Smith, is do a very quick, I think I can do it about 10 minutes or less, very quick history of our country, because the American public needs to know who we are as a country, how we formed, many things we did right, many things we did wrong, and I want to walk through where these decisions came from that has created the crisis we have now in 2016. So would that be okay with
you?
No problem.
Just
do a quick walk through.
People need to know. People need to know the history. So please go ahead. No, people need to know, because I think it's important that everyone understands this, because the people that are listening, most of them are not Native American. They need to know how this happened and how it affects all of us. So please go ahead.
Well, and this isn't taught in our school system. America's history and our governing structure isn't taught in the K-12 or even the higher academic levels. So So, and we really need to understand that we're, in our global perspective, we're one of the youngest countries on the planet, certainly one of the most successful and a very unique form of government that is supposed to be of the people. So I'm going to start with Columbus. Now, I'm going to move through this quickly. I'm going to start with Columbus in the 1492, during the doctrine, during that period of time. That wasn't too far after people discovered the world was round. Explorers were all over the globe, going everywhere, and there was this thing called the Doctrine of Discovery. It was the Catholic papal bull or order that all the explorers abided by and acknowledged, and it allowed them, you know, he who found a continent or explored something and planted a flag, sort of see the conqueror goes the spoils. And so when the North American continent was discovered, the doctrine of discovery was the way things were. I'm not saying right or wrong, it's just the way things were. Some of the conquerors that were exploring different areas of the globe would decimate anyone they found there and literally take it over. And so when I hear this phrase that we often do because of some of the political propaganda, when I hear this phrase of we were here first, I sometimes want to think you should be grateful that we were here second, because when we founded Jamestown in 1620, the folks in Jamestown and the first settlers coming over from Europe, colonists coming over from Europe, they had no intention of decimating those that were here. They just were escaping tyranny of Europe and England and trying to live, find a new way of life here. And they worked very hard to get along with the Indians, and there were periods of time when the Indians literally saved their lives, and there were also periods of times when the Indians just massacred them. So not a good time period. But there was about 170 years. Our country is 227 years old. There's 170 years between the founding of Jamestown and the formal adoption of the Constitution in 1789, the United States Constitution, when we formed the United States. Now, what's important for folks to remember is that first we had these colonies in the big Revolutionary War, and then we had the 13 colonies who formed the United States. The states formed the federal government with limited powers. So from 1789, it wasn't too much longer, less than 20 years, to 1803, when the United States was growing. Jefferson bought the Louisiana Purchase, which is most of Middle America. And later on, we were making negotiations with England and Spain for the Northwest Territory, and later on the Southwest Territory. And the United States grew across the country. Then we move up to 1830. That was a very important time in Indian history, because the settling of the United States was predominantly happening on the East Coast, and skirmishes with Indians was getting very intense. Congress at that time came up in 1830 with the Indian Removal Act. That's what created the Trail of Tears. The Indian Removal Act brought us to moving Indians west of the Mississippi. That was one of the consequences was the Trail of Tears. Moving Indians to west of the Mississippi. So they're leaving their homelands in the eastern area where states are being formed and population is burgeoning. And they're moving to lands promised in the western state. Then we get into 1855. And 1855 was 5 years before the Civil War. I'd like to stop and talk a moment about 1855, because major things were happening. The United States had acquired most of the continent. The western part was in territorial status, but new states were being formed. The cry of the day from Congress was, go west, young man. Go west, young man. So to settle these new territories. So the young man puts what he can in his wagon. He's given no resources from the federal government whatsoever, but young man goes west. And he's told, if you find a piece of ground and you work that piece of ground for 5 years, you can homestead that property. In 1855, the president and Congress were executing treaties to guarantee, they had a duty to protect the American Indians. That was a duty that came from the Supreme Court, not from Congress. It was a federal trust relationship, a duty to protect the Indians. That started a process of treaty making and establishing reservations out in the western states. And those treaties were really serving two populations. Those treaties were initiated by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the executive branch, and they were to encourage Indians not to fight with other tribes, which was happening constantly, and they were encouraged not to fight with the settlers, and they were promised a bounded area of land that would be only theirs, and that the federal government would protect them, and that settlers would never intrude upon them, and they would be left to live any way they wished to communally on the Indian reservations under those treaties of 1855. In those treaties, they did agree, they did have to allow public roads to go through the reservations, railroads, power, things like that, and they also had to promise not to harm settlers and not to fight with other tribes. So during those treaties were really peacekeeping treaties while we were urgently trying to settle the West. They were truly peacekeeping treaties for both populations, settlers and Indians. And those treaties were set up. The mentality of Congress in 1855 was that it would take a couple generations for the Native Americans, American Indians, and whose lifestyle was hunting and gathering and somewhat nomadic, it would take a couple of generations for the American Indian to become assimilated, which is a word the Indian industry hates, but it's true, so that the American Indian could be a full United States citizen, could own property, could vote, and be equal to all other Americans. That was really the purpose of the treaties. And then when Congress thought it would take a couple generations, they ended treaty making in 1871. I'm going to go back to 1855 another moment. And that is, let's look at what was happening to all the folks that lived in the United States in 1855. This is 5 years before the Civil War. Matt, you know, go west, young man. The federal government was giving young man nothing, but the young man went west, built homes, farmed land, built churches, built schools, and so on. Young man settled the West, built Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco. Young man with no resources from the federal government settled the West and built the western states. You know, in 1855, tribal governments and Indians were provided annual dollars, health and medicine and doctors and blacksmiths and schools and the basics that they needed on their reservation. The federal government every year since 1855 provides all the basic life needs for the American Indians. In 1855, before the Civil War, this country was still a slavery country. We were buying and selling cattle and blacks like cattle in 1855. So one of the things I find troubling is, why is it that the American Indians, and not the, I'm not speaking of the tribal families and the wonderful tribal people I know. I'm speaking of the political leadership, the elitists that are making, that are taking all the money. They say, you stole our land. They say, we were here first, and everything that's wrong with the American Indian today is the white man's fault, and yet they're the only ethnicity that has ever always had annual resources from the federal government. No other ethnicity, and certainly not the black Americans, were treated like that in the 1850s, and I don't think the American public has that in the right perspective. 1855 was a very significant year. Jumping up to 1871, we ended treaty making, getting ready to have the American Indians made full citizens by 1924. One other thing, 1924, all American Indians were declared U.S. citizens under the Snyder Act. In 1904, again, we're settling the Louisiana Purchase, Northwest Territory, South Treaty of Guadalupe. We're settling the western states. Here's a thing that happened over 100 years ago in 1904. The Secretary of Interior declared, put out a policy that all of our new water and energy systems that needed to be built in the western states were to be located on or near Indian reservations. Because the states had their statehood and their state authority and the check and balance, and, you know, their balance. The state had its state, but the federal government wanted to keep a strong hand on the water and energy and power coming online in the western states. So in 1904, a fellow by the name of Alfred B. Fall, best known for being impeached over the Teapot Dome scandal, that Alfred B. Fall declared that all dams, electrical, new electrical systems going into the western states must be on or near Indian reservations. If you look at a map of the country, you will see that big hydropower dams like Hoover Dam, Cooley Dam, Grand Cooley Dam, your major hydropower dams and your major energy sources are, in fact, located on or near Indian reservations and have been for over 100 years. I'll pick that piece up when we get to 2016, but that's a very important piece to understand. So then we move up to 1924, all American Indians are citizens, and the assimilation was nearly complete. The reservations had been opened up in the 1880s for settlement by settlers, opened up for homesteading and further settling the West, opening up the integration of farmers and Indians working together, and most of the reservations cooperated very well with that. So we were almost to full citizenship. We were to full citizenship of American Indians, and generally getting ready to do away with Indian reservations because they were full citizens. They could own land. They could be self-sufficient. And then 10 years later, we had a communist, I mean an avowed communist, an author by the name of John Collier, who happened to be appointed Bureau of Indian Affairs commissioner. And he had spent some time with Canadian Indians and some southwestern Indians, and he had decided, oh, this assimilation isn't working. These poor tribal members need to live communally. And he came up with the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, which stopped all assimilation, started isolating Indians on their reservations, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs ceased serving two populations. It was then only about the tribal governments and Indians. And that reversed nearly 100 years of really becoming one America. That reversed that. And that has escalated right now up to 2016, just off the charts, Dr. Yes. Smith. So that I'm just run through 227 years of our country, and it's a country that has done some things beautifully well, and it's a country that has done some things horrifically bad. Slavery was a bad thing, and the skirmishes between Indians and cavalry and settlers. We were a rough, uncertain country, just learning how to be a country. But my feeling is that throughout that process, the ones receiving the most protection and the most resources all throughout that part, unlike any other Americans, were the American Indians. And yet, we still keep hearing, you stole our land, when all land was paid for. Treaties were like a contract, a sales contract. The tribal members that were paid for their land, ceding their land. They were paid in cash and annually, and still are, for their land.
Elaine, let me.
They say you stole our land. We did not.
Let me ask you something.
Thomas Jefferson used to rail when he heard somebody say Elaine, that about the land of the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay, let me ask you something.
The United States bought the Louisiana Purchase land from France, and there was no Aboriginal land or Indian title in any of that land, and yet, within the reservations, within the Louisiana Purchase, we paid the members anyway for the land and created reservations. So nobody stole anybody's land.
So, Elaine, let me ask you something. So, that first of all, that history is something I've never heard before, and I think very few people have probably heard that. So I thank you for that. That was, I've never heard of any of those treaties and the people you're speaking of. But do you think, though, what you're saying would upset a lot of Native Americans in this country who do feel that the land that's been stolen from. I mean, I can equate this to, because I'm African-American myself, in terms of black people wanting reparations and things like that, which I've not necessarily agreed with, but there's this feeling that, yes, we were abused as a race, and there should be some payback. And we see the decimation of this of the Native Americans in this country. Do you think that that's going to sit well with people that are suffering at this point? Where is the blame for this of the state of the Native Americans at this point?
I think that there are tribal members, and I can't speak with a very broad brush, but I think there are tribal members that would very much agree with, or let me say American Indians Americans of Indian ancestry would agree with me. Probably those who no longer live on reservations would agree with me, because their lives are working for them considerably better than the lives of those living on the reservation. So those American Indians who, like me, honor their ancestry and respect their culture and traditions, they would probably agree with me. But there is what I call the Indian industry, and that's these very elite, wealthy tribal government leaders and the lobbyists that roam the halls of Congress and the Capitol buildings in states that just call me every name in the book. I mean, they just hate it when I talk. I'm just called KKK. I'm called a Nazi. I'm called racist. I'm called many, many things. So certainly not everybody agrees with me. But where I'm coming from on this, Dr. Smith, is that I have one country. You know, when somebody tells me, go back where I came from here. Right. Most Americans have come from here. I don't have another country. And so, and I should not be treated in some lesser manner because I'm white or because I'm Hispanic or because I'm something else, you know. But that's kind of where things have gone. So absolutely, not everybody agrees with me, but I don't need them to. I'm speaking my truth, and I'll be heard by some and reviled by others, and that's the way it is.
Well, so let's jump to 2016, and we've already got people calling in. So everyone that's calling in, I just want them to be patient for a second, because we have a couple more things I want to get out first. But what does the Obama, bringing this up to now, to 2016, because I've read some of the things that you've written, I've read the article, and how is the current government's policy, and I'm not going to say this is all Obama, right? I mean, wasn't previous administrations also, I guess, had some of these policies?
Absolutely.
Is it simply that there are a certain amount of elitists in the tribal governments or in that situation that are really benefiting, and then the majority of the people are suffering? Is that the point here that we're saying?
Well, there's certainly no cookie cutter for the 567 tribes or the reservations. There are, particularly in California, there's I think almost 100 tribes that just popped up with the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act in 1988. And they have very small enrollments. Maybe there are tribes as small as 3 people that have a big Class 3 casino. And there's very small enrollments in the California rancherias and the Class 3 tribal casinos that are operated by those folks. The traditional reservations in the Northwest and Midwest have larger enrollments and a very different lifestyle. But one of the things that is happening, when I mentioned 1934 and the Indian Reorganization Act that started reversing the policy that had been implemented for decades, when that happened, in 1934 and prior to that, there was a thing called the War Powers Act, Territorial War Powers Act, and that first came on at the end of the Civil War. When the Civil War was over and some of the Southern plantation owners would not free the slaves, they formed up the Freedmen's Bureau, and through the Territorial War Powers Act, they sent marshals in onto the plantations to rescue the slaves and bring them up to the northern states and free them.
And Elaine, this was what year? You said
this would have been right around the end of the Civil War when we had the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment in the Reconstruction years.
Okay. Well, let me do this. We're really over a break. I'm going to take a quick break because I'm going to come right back to that because I want you to finish explaining that.
Okay.
Very, very interesting stuff. You're listening to Truth, Medicine, and Politics. My guest tonight is Elaine Willman. We're talking about the Native American situation and how it affects us all. We will be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Truth, Medicine, and Politics with Dr. Gregory A. Smith. To get on the air live with your questions or comments, call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222 or 800-ABC-KABC. We'll be right back right after this break.
Hey, are you sleeping alone again because you're snoring? You can't wear your CPAP? And you have a lot of fatigue? We treat these problems with a mouthpiece that has 5 FDA certifications. Call the Beverly Hills Center for Snoring for a no-charge consultation at 310-550-9119. That's 310-550-9119.
Are you tired of the old bait and switch when you're buying auto insurance online? May I interest you in a conversation with an actual human being regarding your insurance needs? If so, call HVH Insurance Services at 888-498-4495. HVH Insurance specializes in auto, home, and business insurance. For honesty, integrity, and a personal relationship with your broker, pick up the phone today and call HVH at 888-498-4495 or log on to hvhins.com. That's hvhins.com.
Are you ready for the truth? Are you ready to have your consciousness expanded? The world's best-known conspiracy researcher and revealer of spiritual truth is coming to Los Angeles and other U.S. cities. David Icke presents his fantastic all-day event, presenting the synthesis of his 26 years of cutting-edge research and revelation in one day. The Worldwide Wake-Up Tour rolls into the Irvine Marriott on September 17th for an all-day event. Tickets are available at theworldwidewakeup.com. That's www.theworldwidewakeup.com. David's latest presentation has been hailed as his most powerful yet, and he will address what really happened on 9/11, what is driving terrorism, the current refugee crisis, and massive push for a third world war. A world where laws are being passed every day that grant the government and the corporations they represent control over what we eat, what we drink, what we think, and even how we raise our children. For tickets, log on to theworldwidewakeup.com. That's www.theworldwidewakeup.com. Theworldwidewakeup.com.
This Sunday, September 11th, is the second Sunday of the month, and it's Rose Bowl Flea Market Sunday at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, one of the world's most unusual shopping places, the shopping place of the stars and the perfect place to find all those one-of-a-kind items you need for fall fun and entertaining. Come see our 2,500 vendors offering their wares, antique radios, Victrolas, glass, toys, signs, statues, games, cards, lamps, furniture, collectibles, all types of great room decor, new merchandise, arts and crafts, vintage clothing, and lots more. The place to find the rare, the bizarre, and one of a kind. Start thinking about your fall projects, and it's not too early for holiday shopping. This Sunday at the Rose Bowl Flea Market in Pasadena, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Special early preview admissions and free or preferred VIP parking available. For more information, go to rgcshows.com. Produced by RG Canning Enterprises, Inc.
Hi, I'm Mike O'Brien, CEO of Postings.com. BBB knows that we pride ourselves on helping businesses of all sizes find the best candidates for their open positions. Earning an A-plus rating from the BBB demonstrates our commitment to providing exceptional customer service. We strive to make hiring easy. Our BBB accreditation proves that you can trust us to help you find your next great employee. Postings.com invites you to check out our reviews at BBB.org or post your jobs at Postings.com.
Hi, it's Alan Gervey.
And I'm Carrie Kasem.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice?
Then tune in to Gervey's Law Saturdays at 2 when we open up the discussion and tackle difficult issues in law and life.
That's right. You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervey's Law? Gervey's Law is that anything that can go wrong can also go right. And we go at it with some of the greatest legal minds in the country.
It's the intersection of law and life. Don't miss it. Saturdays at 2 right here on Talk Radio 790 KAVC.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. Call InventHelp today.
Call 1-800-358-7816. That's 1-800-358-7816.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 877-735-7485 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 877-735-7485 to take your call now. Call 877-735-7485. That's 877-735-7485. Again, 877-735-7485.
Let's sweat the big stuff, the things that really matter, like finding cures. Join City of Hope's endurance and fitness team participating in the Trick or Try, presented by Performance Bike on Saturday, October 29th, and support groundbreaking research and treatment for cancer, diabetes, and other life-threatening diseases. City of Hope, the miracle of science with soul. Join the team today by registering at hopesweatcures.org. That's hopesweatcures.org.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. Call InventHelp today.
Call 1-800-358-7816. That's 1-800-358-7816.
First, Gary from accounting came in with the sniffles. Just a cold, he said. But it was not a cold. Then Janet breaks out in a heavy sweat. It's the flu. Then round and round the office it goes. But when it's your turn, well, it's not going to be your turn because you got your flu shot at Rite Aid, where they care about you and your health. So while they're waiting for the coughing, sore throat, aching flu to pass, you can go to the big game. Score! Shield yourself with a flu shot from Rite Aid before it's too late. No appointments necessary, and it's free with most insurance. Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Flu vaccines available while supplies last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacy for details.
Say, what is this?
You know what it is.
790-790-790-790.
KABC.
Want the truth? You're listening to Truth, Medicine, and Politics with Dr. Gregory A. Smith. To get on the air live with your questions or comments, call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222 or 800-ABC-KABC. And now, Dr. Gregory A. Smith.
And I am back, and my guest tonight is Elaine Willman. We're talking about the Native American issues, the political issues surrounding it, what's going on the reservation, what's going on with the money coming into these from these Indian casinos, and really how it affects us all. And this is really a good time for me to sort of plug that starting September 24th, this show is going to be from 8 to 10. It's going to be 2 hours because, Elaine, what you're talking about deserves more time. We only have probably about 10, 12 minutes left. So I want to let you finish out what you were talking about, but we have, if you can briefly do that, because we have several people that want to ask you some questions. So go ahead,
sure,
finish your point.
Sure. I want to finish my point on the War Powers Act, because that was utilized to rescue many slaves after the war and through the Freedmen's Bureau. And then when that was completed, the Freedmen's Bureau was transitioned to become the Bureau of Indian Affairs. so that the federal government could continue the Territorial War Powers Act in settling the West. That's how they did their treaties. The reason that War Powers Act is so critical today in 2016, is because everything from 1934 to 2016 in federal Indian policy is framed and authorized under the Federal War Territorial War Powers Act. That's the authority that they use. Here's the problem. The War Powers Act was legal in territories, the Western territories. But once a state had its statehood and became a separate sovereign, the Territorial War Powers Act could not be used against the state. But today, with the gaming money, I'll show you how it works today. Today, if there's a big casino that's got a lot of free gaming money because all their basic life needs are paid by us taxpayers, so that free gaming money buys lobbyists, it buys legislators. They can contribute to both political parties. They can participate. They can write checks. No other American government, not a city, county, state, can write a check to a political party. Tribal governments can. So they use that big money to buy power, political power. And when they buy land, buy a big property and take it off of California's property tax and place it into trust for an Indian tribe, their source of authority is the War Powers Act. That's an act of war against the state. When you take a piece of property from the state without the approval of that state legislature and you place it into federal trust, the foundational authority is the illegal use of the War Powers Act. And that is coming up to the Supreme Court this coming year. It's in New York case. It's in a California case. It's in a Michigan case. It's going to be in a Montana case here soon. So I'll quote Justice Clarence Thomas. He said back in 2004 in one case, that all of federal Indian policy is unconstitutional. In our Constitution, we have three sovereignties. The first sovereignty in the Constitution is yours and mine as a citizen. The second sovereignty is the states. Remember, the states created the federal government. The third sovereignty is the federal government. There is no tribal sovereignty. There is no tribal governance. There is no reference to federal Indian policy found within the four corners of the Constitution. As recently as this year, Justice Thomas called federal Indian policy a fiction, and he challenged Congress and his justices to say, show me where in the Constitution federal Indian policy is constitutional. It's not there.
Wow.
And yet we've become this huge power, this huge political power, because no elected official, whether you're a city council member or a senator, wants to be called racist if he says no to a tribal request. And it's just gone totally out of control to where now this administration is using tribal governments and reservations to capture all the waters in the West, to capture the forests. They're now doing a dozen bills, sneaking forests, handing off our national forests to tribal government management. Well, tribal governments have no duty to you and me. They have no duty to anybody except their enrolled tribal members. And to hand our national forests off and our state waters off and to take out crop production, which is going on here in Montana and Oregon and Wyoming, the Obama administration is using tribal governments and Indian reservations to replace state authorities and our citizen rights. That's where it affects every single one of us, because as our taxes go away and we have to make up the tab, we're all in trouble, and our protections as citizens are going away.
We
can't go to a tribal meeting. We can't vote for a tribal elected official. We have no voice in that government, and they have no authority to govern us.
Yeah,
and that's what's going on.
I don't think very few people know this. Elaine, let me get some callers on. We only have about 19 minutes left, so I'm going to bring on James Martinez, and James is actually a previous guest. James, how are you?
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Good, good.
Well. Hello, James.
Hello, Elaine. It's a pleasure to speak with you. So I wanted to let everybody know on this call, I've listened to you closely. I've been involved with the Lakota tribe for quite some time. I was a close confidant and business associate of Russell Means. And yes. the big event that is going on with the water rights and treaties and who owns what and water is life and so much, this is the cover story for something much bigger that's going to open up in the next couple of weeks and probably in the next month or so. I've been all over the world discussing this. It's been public before, but I wanted to notify you that the Lakota are the first group of indigenous tribal people that are going to be bringing in cold fusion to the world. This is a technology that's extremely controversial. It was discovered in 1989. This will dramatically change our energy policy worldwide. They have been behind this. It was Russell Means that asked me to go public with this and carry this torch and see it through. And you're going to see this come out in further headlines. This has already gone public on RT. Former tribal council member Phyllis Young went public with Sean Stone on RT and announced that they're getting involved with this technology as a kind of act of peace to bring back our relationship to the earth and protect an environment. So, but here's the situation with this. All the major countries involved, this has been very secret. This is going to completely obsolesce and take out the need for fossil fuels. It's going to change the structure of money. It's going to change how we deal with each other. But most importantly, it's going to probably end up saving the planet, most of all. So I wanted to let you know that, let your audience know that you're going to see more of this information start to come out in the next couple of weeks, because I've been in discussions with Chief David Archibald and Phyllis Young about this. And I know Pearl Means, the widow of Russell Means, is currently in the Dakotas right now. And there's discussions about how this is going to unfold. So I wanted to let you know and let your listeners know. And this is a cause for celebration, so it's good news.
Well, you know, I just this morning heard reference about that, James. And it certainly sounds like a very productive thing. But the one thing that I worry about, because as I said, I listened to David Icke last week, and the agendas, the global agendas, are tied very closely in with tribal governments. So my question back to you would be, will this cold fusion and this Lakota tribal implementation, how will that fit within the framework of our republic form of government, of the United States? Is that going to come in under the United Nations? Because that's the long-range goal of all of this, James.
Oh, yeah.
So that's my concern about it.
First of all, I know David. I went to London to tell him this news quite some time ago. Mm-hmm. I've been in touch with him. We're at the crossroads right now of a completely new place with new laws that are going to have to be drafted. So we're in negotiation.
Exactly.
Because of cold fusion, there's nothing in law discussing non-entropy. It doesn't exist in law. Non-entropy is a flashy word for free energy. Hmm. All law is based, and all our economies are based on deficiencies or lack of something. When you have non-entropy, it changes the structure of law, and the Lakota are going to be at the negotiating table for all of this, because there's many countries involved. All the biggest companies are involved with this. Mm-hmm. This is going to completely change the structure of everything. So do I know precisely what's coming next? No. But I do know that your question is very pertinent, and that is going to be part of the discussion. I'm an advisor to the Lakota on this. There's top scientists are involved.
Yes.
How it's going to be implemented with law, I can't tell you. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm watching these things, James, and I appreciate your question. I'm watching the Dakota Pipeline scenario with the standoff that's going on there right now. And it's a really difficult issue, because we're talking about 1 or 2% of the American public who are concerned about lands near their reservation that want to stop that pipeline for environmental and sacred and cultural reasons. But on the other hand, we have 324 million Americans that need a country that is energy sufficient, that is not dependent on foreign energy sources,
exactly,
as we've always been. So
exactly.
It's a really double-edged sword. I appreciate the concerns of the Native Americans out there. I truly do. But on the other hand, should 1 or 2% of the American public be able to stop America from becoming self-sufficient. And that's a problem out in Washington State, too, with a much-needed coal port that one or two little tribes there have.
I am aware this particular technology is a national security issue because other countries are developing. As you know, people do not want this country to thrive. They want it to end. But
exactly.
This is not been decided fully yet. There's elements that are going on in China and other countries that are going to affect this. It's very complicated, as you know.
Yeah.
But I would suggest everybody look with an open heart and positive visualizations of what's coming next, because it's kind of like we're moving into an unknown territory. But this is good, though, because it's going to bring everybody up to the plate, up to the negotiating table.
And before you guys go in, James, I appreciate the call. I appreciate the point. There's a few more people. I just want to give. We only have about 4 minutes. So, James, I really appreciate what you have to say.
Anytime. No problem.
Thanks for calling. And let me get, Elaine, another, at least one more person on here. Let me bring on Lynette. Lynette, are you there?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Thank you, guys, for this show. I was wondering, has there been any other word on the Freeman Bureau lawsuit that was, there was a Congresswoman Diane Watson, that launched an investigation, and there became a lawsuit about the Freeman's Bureau about 15 years ago. And I think around this time last year or part of this year, there should have been a verdict. And I was just wondering how that went. And also, I would like to, congratulate the Lakotas and all the other thousands and, hundreds of other tribes that made up that, defense against the pipeline and the bankers that's been backing that, global bankers, that is, that's mm-hmm. been backing that pipeline that, because we have to repair our energy grid. We have the capability to have wind, electric, and all kinds of other energy. And why should our Native First Nation people have to suffer behind our petty little problems? We can solve our own problems. They suffered enough.
We got
and,
three.
And
we
Jill
got,
Stein, I'm rooting for her for president, of course. But
Lynette, let her answer, because we have about 2 minutes left.
Yeah,
Thank you so much.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry to rush, but we have about 2 or 3 minutes, Lane. Why don't you answer your question? I want to give you a chance to say something at the end. Go ahead.
Well, I would just very quickly, I think Lynette may be referring to a dispute going on with the Cherokee tribe. Years ago, the Cherokee tribe had black slaves, and they were required by the federal government to include their slaves as enrolled members of the Cherokee. And they were the freed slaves that became enrolled members of the Cherokee, and just a few years ago, the Cherokee disenrolled them. And there's a big lawsuit that is still moving through one court or another, up and down the court food chain, that is, I don't think it's been entirely resolved. So I think that's what she meant. I'm thinking that's what she meant by the Freedmen's Bureau, because the Freedmen's Bureau has been gone for a long time. But.
So, Elaine, we have about a minute and a half. I want to just give you an opportunity. Where can people read more about this? How can they see what your work that you've done? Is there any websites or anything people can go to get more information?
They can go to Citizens Equal Rights Alliance, at Citizens Plural, citizensequalrightsalliance.com. That's a website that's like a complete law library on federal Indian policy. I welcome any emails, and I would invite James, that I was just speaking with, to email me. I'd love to stay in touch with him on these things.
What's an email people can ask you questions at?
My email address is Toppin, T as in Tom, OPPIN, @AOL.com. And I welcome emails from people who disagree with me and or agree with me. I know that this subject is new to many people. It's very uncomfortable. We don't, we're still a country that's growing, but we're a country at high risk. We're a prize on the planet. And there are globalists that want us taken down. If you look at the maps of Agenda 2030, there are no states of the United States. There's only United Nations regions in the North American continent. We're a country that is coming down fast.
Right.
If we don't reverse this.
Yeah, there's.
And unfortunately, the tribal members who can't speak for themselves are pawns in this process and living poorly while these wealthy tribal leaders and our elected officials
are living it up.
You know, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble.
We are out of time. Listen, this is an important subject. We are definitely going to bring you back for 2 hours so we can take more questions. But I thank you for coming on tonight and shedding some light on a subject that most people just are not familiar with. Thank you for coming on tonight.
And thank you so much, Dr. Smith, for being courageous enough to allow me to speak on this subject. It is an awkward subject, and we do have to find solutions, and I think we will if we can start some dialogue.
Absolutely. Listen, you've been listening to Truth, Medicine, and Politics.
This show furnished by Dr. Gregory A. Smith.